This sermon is available for free download from www.graceunlimited.co.za. That's www.graceunlimited.co.za. There you will also find many other sermons, the speakers' blogs, events, pictures, links, web store, e-documents, and contact details. Simply follow the links to Grace Unlimited on Sermon Audio.
Now, as Christian went on his way, he came to a little hill placed purposely so that pilgrims could have a view of what lay ahead of them. So Christian went up the hill, and from there he recognized Faithful, journeying not far in front of him. Then Christian called, "Hello! Hold up there! Wait, and I will be your companion!" At that, Faithful turned around and looked. Christian called again, "Wait, wait, I'll catch up with you!" But Faithful answered, "No, I'm running for my life from one who is after me." At this, Christian became determined and put all his strength into catching up. He quickly reached Faithful and even ran beyond him so that the last was first. Then he smiled proudly because he had outrun his brother. While still gloating, however, Christian failed to watch his step and suddenly he stumbled and fell. He was unable to get back to his feet again until Faithful came up to help him. Then I saw in my dream that they went on together in brotherly love, sharing with each other about all that had happened to them on their pilgrimages. Christian began saying, "Faithful, my brother, whom I honor and love, I am glad that I have caught up with you and that God has so unified our spirits that we can walk as companions on this pleasant path." "Dear friend," said Faithful, "I have desired your company ever since leaving our town, but since you left ahead of me, I was forced to come much of the way alone." "How long did you stay in the city of destruction before you set out after me on your pilgrimage?" asked Christian. "Until I could stay no longer, for soon after you left, there was a great deal of talk that in a short time our city would be burned down to the ground by fire from heaven."
"Really?
Did your neighbors say this?"
"Yes, it was in everyone's mouths for a while."
"What? Didn't anyone but you come away from there to escape the danger?"
"As I said, there was a great amount of talk, but I don't think they strongly believed it. For in the heat of the debate, I heard some of them speak derisively about you and your desperate journey." That is what they called your pilgrimage. "But I believed, and I still do, that fire and brimstone will fall from above to destroy our city. Therefore, I have made my escape."
"Did you hear any talk of neighbor Pliable?"
"Yes, I did, Christian. I heard that he followed you until he came to the Slough of Despond, where some have said he fell in. He didn't want anyone to know this, but I'm sure that's the kind of dirt he was covered with."
"And what did the neighbors say to him?"
"He has been greatly ridiculed by all sorts of people since his return. People mock and despise him, and he cannot even find employment. Now he's 7 times worse off than if he had never gone out of the city."
"But why are they so much against him, since they also despise the way that he abandoned?"
"Oh, they say, hang him, he's a turncoat. He wasn't true to what he professed."
"I think God has stirred up enemies against him. They hiss at him and scorn him because he abandoned the way."
"Were you able to talk with him at all before you left?"
"I met him once in the streets, but he quickly looked away and crossed to the other side, obviously feeling ashamed of what he had done, so I didn't get a chance to speak to him."
"Well," said Christian, "when I first set out, I had great hopes for that man, but now I fear he will perish along with the city when it is destroyed. For it has happened to him, according to the true proverb, a dog returns to its vomit, and a sow that is washed goes back to her wallowing in the mud. Yes, I fear this too. But who can thwart the inevitable consequences of one's own foolish choices? Let's have a look at the two things that John Bunyan has put before us this evening. And those two things I've called contest and encouragement. And the first, obviously, you see the contest when Christian goes up this little hill that has been put there by the Lord of the place, and the hill was put there so that Christians can see some distance ahead on the Christian journey. And of course the hill speaks of a place in your Christian life where you feel that you've advanced to a point where you're really getting the most out of your Christian life. You're filled with hope, you're filled with joy, you can see the way ahead. You remember he's just come out of the valley of the shadow of death where he couldn't see a thing, but now he feels free and he can see what's lying ahead and he can put everything in his theological framework and there's nothing to worry him anymore. In fact, as he stands up there on that hill, you'll notice what happens. He sees Faithful walking some distance ahead. And Faithful, of course, he identified as a man who was from the city of destruction. So Christian calls out to Faithful, as we read, and he begins to desire some close Christian fellowship. And as he calls out to Faithful, you remember what happened? Faithful says, hey, hold on, I'm not going to stop, I'm making progress, there are dangers behind me and I'm not slowing down, I don't want to get tangled up in those problems that I was tangled up in before. So Faithful refuses to slow down. What's happening? The contest is beginning. I have arrived at this point in my Christian life and I'm not going to wait for anybody else. I've reached the stage, if you want to be with me, you catch up with me, but I'm not stopping, I'm not going to spend time, I'm not going to waste time dragging people along who are not growing as fast as I'm growing. So Faithful's going and he's got his mind set on what's ahead of him and he's turned his back on what's behind him, which is good, but shouldn't he have slowed down? Shouldn't he have stopped? Shouldn't he have at least waited for his friend? So on the other side of that, we see Christian, and he sees that Faithful's not going to wait for him, and of course the other side of the contest begins. He thinks, look at this guy, he hasn't been on the road as long as I've been on the road, he's less experienced than I am. I mean, I came out of the city first, I've had all of these experiences, I've done all of this study, I've been in the church, I've been to the armory, where's he been? He's like wet behind the ears, he hasn't been anywhere yet. So Christian takes a bit of offense and he starts becoming proud and he thinks, I'll show this guy how advanced I am beyond him. I can catch up just like this, I can progress in the Christian life. He's going as fast as he can to get away from his problems that he's had in the past, but I can overtake him, I can be ahead of him, I'll show him how advanced I am, how mature I am. So of course Christian starts running and he makes this demonstration of development and he overtakes Faithful, and of course he starts stumbling because he's not watching his feet and he crashes and he's not able to get up without Faithful's help. And oh, the Lord blesses us so often in the Christian life by putting us in a position where we need the help of other believers. And I've been there, I've personally been there, where I've had to sit with younger believers and draw something, some encouragement from their enthusiasm and draw hope from their hope, and just to look at them and be encouraged by them when I feel worn out and tired. But what Bunyan is putting before us here, I think, is the message of Proverbs 16 verse 18, where, you know this thing well, I'm sure you could even quote it for me, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. And the point is that it's not wrong for a believer to advance and to progress and to become mature in the faith, but the danger exists that when we become mature and when we advance, the danger exists that we can become proud.
It's not saying don't become advanced. It's saying don't become proud. And you will notice a couple of things here. And you will notice, firstly, that faithful, as I've said, is a younger Christian. And the remarkable thing is that he is further ahead on the journey than Christian is. Now you would think, well, Bunyan has put him further ahead, so he must be more advanced. But why is he further ahead? You will notice that it is because Christian wasted so much time. You remember Christian's journey. First he fell into the slough of despond. Then he wandered off after Mr. Worldly Wiseman up Mount Sinai. Then you remember he slept on Mount Difficulty and he lost his scroll and he had to go all the way back. So those three incidents, at least, we see Christian wasting time. We see him having to backtrack. We see him struggling with fear. And later on we're going to see more, like when he wanders into the castle of giant despair. But Christian made some errors in his life. He wasted time going into places where he shouldn't have been. And of course, Faithful hadn't done that. And we're going to listen later to Faithful's testimony. Remember, as I said before we started, we're going to look at the different temptations that Faithful faced. And he didn't go through the same temptations that Christian went through. So the point is that even though Faithful is further ahead, he didn't waste the time that Christian wasted, because God brought him by a different route. So the point is, Christian cannot be proud. Faithful can't be proud. Neither of them can be proud, because one is ahead of the other, because God has brought them a different route. You will notice that Faithful faced different temptations and he progressed more quickly. And I think what Bunyan has in his mind here is the truth of a couple of different texts. And the first is 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7, that I've quoted here so many times, where Paul says, "For who makes you different from anyone else? What do you have that you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not?" Paul is speaking about the fact that some believers are boasting because they are gifted, and they have more prominent positions in the church, and they are more showy. And they, because they're more showy and more public and more prominent, they have this impression that they are more important people, like I've mentioned here before. But that's not the fact. Paul is saying, every person stands in the same light before God, but God has been pleased to give certain people more gift and other people less gift. That doesn't make one person more important or more prominent than another. We all stand alike before God, just different gifts, and God gave it, each gift, to each person. 1 Corinthians 10:11-13, you'll remember this well. "These things happened to them as examples," and that these things he's speaking about was Israel in the desert, and when they craved other food, God gave them everything they needed to see God living with them in the tent, God in the desert. God was tabernacling, God himself was living with them, and he gave them everything they needed in the desert. They should have said, "Wow, this is amazing, that we, 500,000 people growing into I don't know how many people when they reach the promised land, can walk right through the desert where other people die, but our shoes are not wearing out, our clothes are not wearing out, we've got water to drink, we've got food to eat." And in spite of the fact that they had all of those things, their hearts still turned away from the living God. They still turned against God and worshipped idols. And Paul says, these things happened to them, the punishments that came upon them as a result of their idolatry. These things happened to them as examples and were written down as warnings for us, on whom the fulfillment of the ages has come. Now he says here in verse 12, "So if you think you are standing firm, be careful that you don't fall. No temptation has seized you except what is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, he will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it." So he's speaking about the fact that every temptation is perfectly engineered by God for every believer, so that believer can grow in that little nursery, that little environment. So while you are growing in one environment, I'm growing in another environment, Charlene's growing in another environment, and we may appear to be in different places, but God is doing different things with us at different times. Everything that God has given us is, every temptation, every situation, every test that God has put us into is uniquely designed for us, which puts us in different places on the map. So a Christian couldn't stand there and look at Faithful and think, oh, he's way ahead of me. And Faithful couldn't stand in his position ahead of Christian and say, oh, he's behind me. Christian may have learnt more in his trials. He may actually have been ahead on the road. My point is further clarified in Romans 12 verse 3. For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the measure of faith God has given you. So every believer has a measure of faith that God has given him. We are dotted all over the map in different positions, and it's impossible for us to gauge who is further ahead and who is further behind. So the point is that believers should never look at one another and compare where I am according to you, because every situation that we find ourselves in is carefully engineered by God. God knows where we are. We can't look at each other and gauge where we are on the map, comparing ourselves with each other. In fact, just off the top of my head, I think of Paul speaking about how a person who compares himself with another person is not wise. I just forget where that is now. I can find it. So after that incident, after this whole contest and after this whole pride and this whole progressing so the other one can't catch up and, you know, jostling for position is over, we see Christian lying on the ground and we see Faithful helping him up, and we see them going on together as brothers. And we think of that wonderful psalm that was written there, Psalm 133, how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity. They are in different places, but they're not looking at each other now and gauging who's ahead and who's behind. They're walking together, even though they've had different experiences. And it says there in verse 2, it is like precious oil poured on the head, running down on the beard, running down on Aaron's beard, down upon the collar of his robes. It is as if the dew of Hermon were falling on Mount Zion. All this picturesque stuff that the Israelites would have understood in those days. They would have appreciated that. But the final verse, it says at the end, for there the Lord bestows his blessing, even life forevermore. There's blessing when brothers walk together, not comparing each other with each other, seeing how we can help one another, seeing how we can walk together and help each other. So that's the contest that we see. What a blessing it is that even though they were in different positions, they're no longer comparing themselves with each other. So then we come to the issue of encouragement. And there are a number of things that Bunyan puts in here that are for our encouragement and things that encouraged Christian on his journey. You'll notice he begins to speak about the city of destruction, and I've changed the order of conversation here to make it flow more logically. First, Faithful explains what happened in the city of destruction after Christian left. And Christian is encouraged by this. Remember how he exclaimed, what? Were they talking about the fact that the city is going to be destroyed? Remember, when Christian was there in the city of destruction, he was speaking and speaking and speaking, and the people were considering him to be sick or ill, and they sent him to the doctor, and they were trying all their remedies on him and telling him to get some rest and giving him some time to get over it. And Christian was so happy to hear that the whole town had begun to speak about the destruction that was coming. And he was so happy that that frantic struggle of his to get out of the city had some impact in that city. So he was encouraged by that. And they had seen that he was desperate, and that they'd taken note of his whole mindset when he'd left the city. And they'd heard that there was fire coming down from heaven. But then, to his dismay, even though there was so much talk, and even though so many people were sharing their opinions, he was saddened to hear that the people were not serious about it. The first thing that came to mind as I considered this was the incident when the angels came to Sodom and Gomorrah, and we think of them speaking to Lot and telling Lot to go and warn his relatives that God is about to destroy the city. And it says here in Genesis 19:14, so Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, hurry, get out of this place because the Lord is about to destroy the city. But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. Terrible situation where they look at him and they say, ah, you know, that's a good one. You know, we didn't expect something so radical from you. In fact, in today's language, they say, hey, that's random. That's a random one. Hey, Lot, just go home. Have a good, have a Disprin and enjoy your sleep. But they thought he was joking. And here we see a man, Lot, frantic in the city, trying to save the lives of the people who are there, and they think he's joking. And here we see the same thing in Christian, who was frantic in that city, pleading with his family, pleading with his neighbors to come with him to escape the wrath to come, and they thought he was joking. They gave him remedies. So while he was encouraged by the fact that there was talk after he left the city, there was hope if there was talk, he was also saddened to hear that nobody turned. But then the conversation goes from the city of destruction to Pliable. Oh, what happened to Pliable? Have you heard from Pliable? And of course, Pliable returns to the city coated with that mud, and the people begin to snicker, and they begin to look at him and laugh, and they begin to curse him. And isn't it interesting that what Bunyan says is that the people in the city hated the way. They hated the Christian life. They hated that for which Christian was heading headlong. They hated that Christian way. But when Pliable comes back to the city to become one of them again, they hate him too. He's standing for what they're standing, but now they hate Pliable. Why is it that they hate Pliable? Isn't that a remarkable thing? I was thinking, and this is why I was looking on the internet for those incidents of pastors who have been disgraced. You often see it. It always makes front page on the newspaper, such and such a pastor caught with his hand in the cookie jar, I think is one of the headlines I saw once. I was thinking of this latest incident, probably one of the most prominent, is Ted Haggard. Remember, with that whole scene where he was removed from the church after that incident that he was involved in. And now I see that he's returned as a Christian businessman. It's all over the news. But my point is this. A guy like Ted Haggard is a highly revered guy in the church. Then he sins and he is exposed. Now the world scoffs at him and the church doesn't want him. He's caught between two positions. He's held at arm's length by the church, and the world looks at him and says, ah, look at him, he's a fallen pastor, he's disgraced. And the whole point is, it seems to me, that the whole reason why the world ridicules people who claim to be Christians and then who fail is because people who do that are saying, there's something different about me. I'm a person who is going to do something that you ordinary guys can't do. I'm going to pull my life right. I'm going to follow Jesus. I'm going to make a stand. I'm going to be a member in the church. I'm going to serve God. I'm going to sacrifice my life in selfless service. And then suddenly when they fall, it's obvious that they are no different from the people in the world. They don't have the power that they said they have. Well, so people see them as high and mighty, self-righteous sort of people who are holding everybody else down, elevating themselves above everybody else. Meanwhile, they're just the same. They're ordinary people, and they have the same failings, and they have no power. As Paul says there to Timothy in 2 Timothy 3:5. Remember that whole chapter, how it begins. But mark this, there will be terrible times in the last days, and he describes how terrible people will be in those days. And he ends off by saying in verse 5, having a form of godliness but denying its power. There's some kind of religious show, but there's no power to stop them from falling into personal sin. So that's why the world hates people like that. And it seems that this is why Pliable is ridiculed. He goes out after Christian and he's going to make a stand, and then he comes skulking back into the town with his tail between his legs, and he's not welcome in the city of destruction, and he's not welcome on the pilgrim journey, and he finds himself a miserable little spot where he can wait for the coming destruction. So that's Pliable that we see, and we see a lot of Pliables in the world today, as I've been saying. Over 300,000 hits on the internet if you just Google the phrase disgraced pastor. And now finally, the final word of encouragement. We see Faithful speaking to Christian about what happened in the city after Christian left. And even though there was all this talk in the city of this coming destruction, we see one person, and as we go on in the story, we're going to notice there were more. We see one person at least hearing of the wrath to come and being shaken to the core and not being able to stay in that city until he's driven to the point where he has to leave. And we see Faithful, and he explains to Christian. Christian says to him, well, how long did you stay in the city? And he said, I stayed in the city until I had to leave. I had to go. And we think of the contrast that Paul writes there to the Thessalonians in 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 6 to 10. He says, God is just. He will, on the one side, pay back trouble to those who trouble you, and on the other side, he will give relief to those who are troubled and to you as well. So Paul is making this contrast between people whom God is going to punish and people whom God is going to bless. And this man, Faithful, realized that he was in the place that God was going to punish. And he knew he had to be in that place where God was going to bless. He had to be among the people that God was going to bless. And he had to move out of that city like Lot had to move out of Sodom and Gomorrah in order to escape God's judgment. And Paul continues there. He says, this will happen, this judgment and blessing will happen when the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven in blazing fire with his powerful angels. He will punish those who do not know God and do not obey the gospel of our Lord Jesus. They will be punished with everlasting destruction and shut out from the presence of the Lord and from the majesty of his power on the day he comes to be glorified in his holy people and to be marveled at among all those who have believed. This includes you, because you believed our testimony to you. So the day is coming when God will be glorified in his people, and that is the day when God will punish those who do not obey the gospel of the Lord Jesus. And this man, Faithful, knew that he had to be among those people in whom God will be glorified when he comes to be glorified in his people and when he comes to punish those who have stood against him. So he began that journey and he moved out of the city when he couldn't stay in the city any longer. And as he arrives at that point, when he hears Christian's voice calling him, is the voice of encouragement. It's the voice of joy. It's the voice of happiness. When I think of what Paul said to the Philippians in chapter 4 verse 1, he says, therefore my brothers, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, that is how you should stand firm in the Lord, dear friends. Obviously the whole letter has gone before that. And he's speaking of brothers that he loves and longed for. And you remember in this chapter 7, when Christian and Faithful begin to speak, Faithful tells him how he's been longing to have this fellowship with Christian on the journey. So I leave you with that this evening. Contest and encouragement. As you journey on, don't be discouraged if you feel that you are left behind in the Christian journey and you're not making as much progress as other people, because God is the one who judges where each person is on the map. You can't look at a person ahead and say he's ahead in the spiritual race. And you can't look at a person behind and say he's behind me in the spiritual race. God has his people in the places exactly where he wants them, and we are all in different positions. And then secondly, if you've been faithfully living out your Christian testimony in this world, and you've seen no results, like Christian, as he left the city of destruction behind him, God is dealing with your personal testimony in the lives of person upon person upon person that you don't even know of. And when we get to eternal glory and God is glorified in his people, part of that glory will be the way in which God says, and on that day, I sent you to that cafe to buy milk, and you remember, you spoke to the owner of that shop. And you remember that there was that day that you were hit by the taxi and you went to heaven, you came here. And after that, that cafe owner spoke to the next guy who came in and said, hey, you wouldn't believe what happened outside there. And the cafe owner said, you know what, that guy just spoke to me about Jesus. And that person was saved as a result. You never know how all of these strings and this whole network is going to work out. But be encouraged by the fact, like Bunyan points out, he had no idea that faithful would be saved and that faithful would be on the journey as a result of his desperate efforts to get out of that city. So I leave you with that contest and encouragement.